Nation, which you can hear today from 11 till 1 o'clock here at 88.5 FM. Community supported KQED Radio San Francisco, where the time is 9 o'clock.
We don't want your faces more.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Friday Forum. I'm Angie Cuero. How many people were there at the Peace March in San Francisco last weekend? 50,000? 100,000? 200,000? That same question came up most prominently after the Million Man March on Washington, when charges flew about political agendas and deliberate undercounts. That issue has been a thorn in the side of the counters and the counted long before that, on all sides of the political agenda. This hour on Forum, we're talking about crowd estimates, who's doing the counting, how they're doing it, and whether an accurate count is even possible. That's coming up on Forum right after National Public Radio News.
Support for NPR comes from NTI, working to strengthen global security by addressing threats from nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. On the web at nti.org.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Forum. I'm Angie Cuero. When a crowd gathers, attention is paid. One person chanting, walking with a sign, well, it's easy to dismiss the one person as a nut. Two people with the same sign and the same chant, for whatever reason, we're a little more inclined to look and to wonder why they're in unison. Three people, you might get the feeling it's an organization. But without a guitar, I won't drag this out to 50 people a day, but you get the idea. When you're demonstrating, numbers count. They count to the demonstrators, and they count to the observers. But even after all these centuries of organized protest, nobody's quite figured out how to get a count everyone can agree on. We learned that with the Million Man March, and we learned it again just last weekend with the San Francisco peace demonstration. We're spending this hour on the methodology, history, and politics of crowd estimates. With us in the studio, Lucy Barber, who's the archivist with the California State Archives in Sacramento and the author of Marching on Washington, The Forging of an American Political Tradition. Good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning to you, Angie.
We also have by phone Dr. Farouk Elbaz, who's the director of the Center for Remote Sensing, Boston University. Hi. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
David Brunel is on the line, the public affairs officer for the Office of Capital Protection with the California Highway Patrol. Good morning.
Good morning.
And to round out the panel, we have Gregory Sir, deputy chief of the San Francisco Police Department. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're going to start things out with Gregory Sir, because, of course, this is the most recent example of counting being a contrast between the one side's view and the other side's view. In San Francisco, what is the purpose of your counting the crowd?
Well, the determining of the size of the crowd often determines how many officers we're going to dedicate to it, and largely it becomes a geographical situation, how much area we need to account for.
And at what point does it start to become relevant which numbers get passed on to the media and distributed as official counts?
When someone asks.
Ah. Is there training within the department? There's someone who's hands-on trained in how to count and oversees the count?
Well, to be perfectly frank with you, what ends up happening is we have finite numbers that are dedicated to certain areas. And for instance, for the one we're speaking of, Civic Center Plaza holds somewhere between 40 and 45,000 people. So it's really, since our command post oversees Civic Center, it's sort of a density observation, whether or not I'm the person that gives the estimate, in my opinion, whether it's completely full or to what percentage it is full, and then that number tops out somewhere between 40 and 45,000, and anything under that is just that, just less than 100% full.
Okay, let's expand this to another jurisdiction. David Brunel with the Office of Capital Protection. First, I guess we best explain what that program is.
I'm sorry, could you ask that question again?
Sure. The Office of Capital Protection is charged with what?
What we do here at the Capitol, we schedule events, whether they be rallies or demonstrations or even wedding parties for that matter. We do anywhere from 900 to 1,000 events a year on Capitol grounds here. So the potential for conflict, as you might imagine, is quite great. We might have conflicting groups, gun control versus gun rights. So what we do is we employ a permit officer to kind of schedule that. And what the groups do is they send in a permit and they do the estimation. We have the event coordinator actually estimate their own crowd and their date. So we can have kind of like a glorified reservation system to avoid that potential for conflict.
Now, in terms of looking back at a past demonstration, recent past, or a recent gathering, and saying, okay, we thought we'd have X number, instead we had Y number, therefore we need to prepare. So do you perform that count to look back at it?
Yes. Well, we do an extensive kind of an investigation or inquiry to the event coordinator to try and nail down as closely as possible what we're going to have. But in the event that the count is way off, we do maintain like a roster to be able to call in some extra officers to keep the peace.
But when all is said and done, you can't look back at it and say, this gathering of gun supporters is finished and we had 50,000 people.
No, we don't do that. There's too much of a potential for conflict, and so we let the event coordinator do the estimation.
Dr. Farouk Elbaz, how common is this that you hear that an organization recognizes the futility of trying to get an accurate count?
Yes, indeed is a very difficult situation here, because it is very difficult to make a good estimate. If you are at ground level, you cannot possibly figure out the number of people. As the chief of police said, you only can do that if you have a very specific area, like a square, and you have, from experience, figured that this area would be filled by 50,000 or whatever, 40 to 45, then you can have an estimate that is close as possible to the reality. However, most demonstrations don't occur in just that one little area, and demonstrations in Washington, for instance, occur over a very large area, which is the mall. And you cannot possibly make these estimates, and therefore you will always have the organizers giving a number, and then some official or some press giving another number, and a controversy ensues.
In fact, that's what brought you into this business. It's interesting to read your backstory, where it turns up in the Earth Observation magazine, which is subtitled The Magazine for Geographic, Earth, and Mapping Information. And it takes a stretch of the imagination to get from there to crowd estimates. But you were brought in on the dispute over the Million Man March, when the Nation of Islam really got in there with the Park Service and said, not only you're underestimating us, but there's an agenda going on here.
Yes, the organizers of the Million Man March said that they had over 1.5 million people. And the National Park Service estimated very quickly that there are about 400,000. So this was a huge difference in the numbers. And I heard the story just like everybody else until a colleague of mine called me from Washington. And said, I have with me 10 prints from the National Park Service photographs. Would your computers, you do all of this counting of sand dunes in the desert with your methodologies, would your computers be able to handle aerial photographs? I said, sure, let's try. Because I had developed a methodology to count sand dunes in desert areas. Mm-hmm. We've done that for a long time. So I got the photographs, and we started applying the same methodology. And lo and behold, we got a number like 870,000. So it was twice as much as what the National Park Service says, and half as much as what the organizers of the event said. So you really can be off by a great deal.
Let's bring Lucy Barber into the conversation, an archivist with the California State Archives. Her book is called Marching on Washington, The Forging of an American Political Tradition. And it is, in essence, a sweeping view of the history of this kind of protest. Once people got into the idea of organized protest, when did this awareness of how big the demonstration is, the idea that that was a critical element, when did that start creeping in?
I think it really started moving and more in the 1930s. Before that, most demonstrations in Washington were judged by how many people came to watch them rather than how many people actually participated. There was a sort of, that was the politics of, I would say up till 1920 was a politics where you were judged by how many people were interested in seeing you. And then around the 1930s, and then especially you start to see in 1940s, a real emphasis on how many people are you going to bring. And I think that's one of the, just listening to both the officers from the different police forces, is that estimate beforehand is as much a part of this whole dialogue of crowd estimates as the estimate you get afterwards. And whether or not the two match is often also really important to the political credibility of the organizers. And I'm sure they struggle in Sacramento just as they do in Washington with organizers claiming they're going to have 50,000 people and 5,000 people show up. Less likely is when people claim beforehand that 1,000 are going to show up and then 20,000 show up. I mean, I think this weekend in Washington and in San Francisco, people were pleased by how many people did show up. They were probably a little bit higher than they might have expected, but I'm sure the organizers estimated in that same area.
If you look at all the decades of protest, at some point someone got smart and said, these numbers aren't certain, therefore they can be manipulated to an agenda. Are there any deliberate and obvious cases of that historically?
I think that you definitely get it during the 1960s with the Vietnam marches, where you always got huge undercounts from the authorities in Washington and at least high estimates from the organizers. And I think the undercounts in those cases were definitely politically motivated. I'm not so sure with the Million Man March, except for that I know from talking to some of the people with the Capitol Police in Washington that they had been very irritated by the Million Man March organizers from the beginning. So they may not have been on the edge of sympathy.
Dr. Eldaz.
Dr. Abel said, the big other challenge besides the fixed square is that the nature of demonstrations now is that people move in and out of them. I mean, living in Washington and also living in Sacramento now, people come, they show up, they're there, they leave. And what my sense is from what, and he can confirm this, is that what the methodology tends to be is, well, let's pick the point when the crowd was the densest at the place we've picked and then try to extrapolate. But I know on Saturday in Washington, it was freezing cold. And so everyone was moving on and off the mall in order to get warm. So whether you could ever take a picture and say, this is the size of the crowd, you can't do it.
Yeah, that's the element that contributes to what you were saying, Dr. Elbaz, is that people are not going to hold still. All right, everybody hang on. We're going to bring a helicopter overhead. Just hold absolutely still for 10 minutes.
That's true. Can I comment on that one? Because
please.
I actually spoke to both the organizers of the Million Man March and the National Park Police on how they did their counting. And the people from the organizers said that they had, at all intersections of streets, people standing there and actually counting heads as people walked through. Yeah, but if you do that, then somebody can go into the mall and then go out to the restroom and come back, or go out from this area to have a sandwich and come back, and so you can actually count people two or three times. So that it is not easy to do that. And when you say I will count a crowd, you actually must say I will count a crowd at the peak time of such and such hour, and that at that hour there were that many people. And in addition, I actually want to make another point here that it is not all the political protests, but that sometimes it is safety of people. I remember being called by the police chief of a city in California, who told me that there will be a grouping on the Cinco de Mayo, and he wanted to see whether we can count the people or not. And he told me that the year before, the organizers of Cinco de Mayo said that there were 100,000 people that came, and the police chief said we estimated that were at least 400,000. And the police, local police, actually charges the people of that group per head. So they said we were paid for one-fourth of what we did, because for every grouping of people we have to have police cars and the ambulances and all of this for public protection. So the numbers don't have to be necessarily only for political pressure, but also for safety of the citizens.
Bearing that in mind, let me go back to David Brunel, who's with the CHP, Office of Capital Protection. This is the part that I'm mystified by. We're going to get to methodology in just a moment, but your office, in essence, doesn't have to worry about that because you're counting on the organizers to do the counting. I guess what mystifies me is it's in your hands to plan for safety and to plan for crowd control, et cetera. And it seems like that's a huge missing element logistically, is how many people did we get and how well did this number of officers work with this many people? How can you manage to plan and then plan again without retrospective counts?
Well, that's very true, and that's the reason why we have a permit officer. We have one officer who's responsible for a very particular interview process. We have a number of questions that we ask, and there's reasons for that. It's, as you mentioned previously, for the group safety. If we've got maybe an older group, and they're going to have a demonstration with several thousand people in summertime, you know how hot it gets in Sacramento. Well, what we do is we make arrangements with the local police department, in this case it would be Sacramento Police Department, to handle buses that come in. And, you know, on the city streets, the Sacramento Police Department, we have to coordinate with another agency, as well as if there's going to be several people and they're going to be here for the whole day, they may be coming from great distances. And so they may have lunches, they may have food and drink, they have to make arrangements for maybe a porta potties on the grounds, because the Capitol is a functioning business climate, and there's just so many things. We also have paramedics that are parking ambulance right.
And this is all stuff you're able to coordinate just on, in essence, trusting the organizers that their numbers will be close to accurate.
Well, yes, we are. We're trusting, but we're also asking a lot of very specific information from them, and we also have a past history, because usually event coordinators, we get to be somewhat familiar with them because they do it on an annual basis. So if we have one permit officer who may be familiar with that person, and if they have a habit of not being completely truthful, we may deny them a permit.
We're going to get down to nuts and bolts of logistics right now. And in fact, if some of you would like to start getting your calls lined up on the other side of that, we'll start taking your calls. So our numbers are 415-863-2476. If you'd like to contribute your questions or comments about crowd estimates, 415-863-2476. If you're listening at kqed.org or you're listening anywhere outside the 415 area code, your toll-free number is 866-SF-FORUM, 866-733-6786. Gregory, sir, this week the police department said, you know, we were dealing with guesstimates and we understand these may not have been entirely accurate in the case of the San Francisco Peace March, so we're going to regroup. Talk to me about what logistics may need to change in the way you've gathered your numbers in the past.
Well, I don't think that the way that field operations has gathered their numbers in the past need to be corrected. What happens is we need to have one speaker or one voice that speaks for the crowd estimate. I was asked by Channel 5, and I was standing at Civic Center when they asked me, and I told them what I just told you. Civic Center holds 40 to 43,000, and I think that the demonstration was as large as any demonstration I've seen in 20-some-odd years, and I would estimate that that would be at least 75,000. So if you basically did the math, I was saying that the crowd was somewhere in the ballpark of 125 or 35,000 in the aggregate. Mm-hmm. Also, I agree with the other members of the forum that you have to understand there's a real ebb and flow to these demonstrations. And then there's also an intersection as the demonstration moves into Civic Center. Civic Center already had a lot of people present that were elderly and families and didn't want to make or couldn't make the march up Market Street. But Market Street was very, very crowded. And as they moved into Civic Center, they displaced some people that were already there, and then some people decided, hey, I'm just going to make the march, and then I'm going to head home. I mean, the major question we answered from the southern end of the square that day was, how do you get to BART? So a lot of people literally made it to the square, and then they believe that they'd made their statement as to this very, very important issue. But I don't think that there's this disparity that everybody seems to think there was. I think the organizers believe that or stated that they thought there were 150,000 people. And I think that when the event commander, who was me, says that there was probably 125 to 130,000, I think we speak to the doctor's margin for error, that I think if I'm off by 10%, we're all really in the same ballpark.
Dr. Elbaz, has this actually engendered any interest in putting together a more accurate counting system across the board, national, federal, state?
Not really. It's only that an attempt was made by the National Park Service by asking me to write a white paper so they could take it to Congress and say, okay, if you really want us to do it right, this is the way to do it. By acquiring, meaning buying a fixed-wing aircraft, buying the proper digital cameras and another high-resolution camera for the archives, and then equipment for the computers to actually place a grid automatically on the place that they see crowds in it, and then come up with a very good number that will be within a few percent. But there was certainly a dollar figure attached to that. It was very close to 20 million when you add the cameras and the aircraft and the training and the people that would do it, the number of people that would have to be assigned to it. But this would be building up the infrastructure to be able to do it for everybody, anywhere, anytime. So Congress looked at that, and they were not about to add that much money to the National Park Service, so they elected just to take the easy road by removing the counting of the crowds from the job description of the National Park Service.
And I understand that the gentleman whose primary job of the National Park Service it was to release those numbers was just hugely relieved.
Yes, because they know that there is always a controversy, and there is no way for him to prove his point, and there is no way for the organizers to prove their point, so there was no methodology that we are very certain about within a few percentage points of the numbers of people that came at a given time in a given place.
Lucy Barber?
Though, of course, they've stopped releasing those numbers to the media. They haven't stopped counting because, as Angie's been emphasizing, there's a value to counting so that you can plan later and understand better how to deal with the crowds. At least this is my understanding. The key switch is the decision to back away from making any releases to the media about the crowd, because it's not just whether or not it costs money or whether it's accurate. It's also whether it fits people's political agenda. And I think what people decided in the wake of the Million Man March is it's just you can't win. Some people in Congress are going to want those numbers to be big. Other groups are going to want those numbers to be small. And then it's easier to, as you say, take the easy way out and not release them to the media. But for security purposes, they're still counting. And indeed, this last weekend, now they had cameras up in order to record the crowd as they were there. I mean, those cameras are going to be permanent security measures, but they were also being used at that point to watch behavior and figure out how to better monitor demonstrations.
And this is essentially a debate without end. I mean, within very recent history, they were still recounting the numbers of people who gathered to hear the I Have a Dream speech.
Oh yeah. I mean, the numbers are regularly exaggerated in my mind. But on the other hand, the numbers were huge for the time. Mm-hmm. So you routinely see estimates that are different than even the organizers made at the time. So
we're talking about the science and the politics of estimating crowds. I want to thank David Brunell for being with us in this first half hour, public affairs officer with the Office of Capital Protection, California Highway Patrol. Thank you, David Brunell. Appreciate that.
Thanks for inviting me.
We also have with us for the remainder of the hour, Lucy Barber here in the studio, author of Marching on Washington, The Forging of an American Political Tradition, Dr. Farouk Elbaz, who's the director of the Center for Remote Sensing at Boston University, and staying with us as well is Gregory Sir, deputy chief of the San Francisco Police Department. We have your calls on the line, and we'll be getting to those as soon as we take a little break here on Friday Forum. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Angie Coiro.
I only saw a small blip on the news last night. It was almost a traffic report that there might be some traffic on Market Street. And I thought, well, it's more than a little traffic block. It's a huge political protest.
Lucy Barber, it's about, in a sense, it's about creating that traffic block so that you get on the news.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things here, that numbers are important, but it's also just about creating an event that captures people's imagination so that they show up, and then that also captures the people's imagination so that there's something to cover, which is why, in addition to numbers, you also want to have interesting signs. Be nice if we had some more compelling speakers at most of these rallies, but people do as well as they can, given the tendency to limit them to 2 minutes instead of the 10 minutes that people had in 1963. So it's a trick to figure out how to get a dramatic, interesting demonstration, and then to get the media coverage that you want afterwards.
Let's take some of your calls. We're going to start with John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm calling about Saturday's March, and it as one who attends all the large events in San Francisco, when there were 300,000 people estimated to be at Halloween in the Castro, and as more than that at Gay Pride Day, the crowds are obviously stationary. However, at this one, as I walked down Market Street, there were vast numbers of people walking out of the area up Market Street, crowds, tons of people on the sidewalks, and that continued the whole day. As people flowed onto Civic Center Plaza up Market Street, they filled Civic Center and then flowed away in equal amounts in all directions. One had only to go down the escalator to BART, as I did at one point, thinking so cleverly in my mind that I would just hop on BART and go to Montgomery Street. Well, when I went down from the Civic Center Plaza, I got caught with thousands of people in that one block long concourse and got stuck. It was just shoulder to shoulder all the way from the turnstile to the base of the escalator. So I just turned around and went right back up. And there was no way to count people underground, no way to count people flocking to 16th and Mission Street. The people in cars, there were people carrying signs who were stuck in traffic, unlike most events where people come and they stay there. It seems to me that there were more than what the organizers estimated, at least 150,000, having gone up to the library and looked down at the crowd and down Market Street and zipped all over as much as possible to see the furthest reaches of the crowd. There were tons of people, unlike any crowd I've ever seen in San Francisco in the 15 years I've lived here.
John, thanks for sharing your impressions on that. And that prompts me to ask Dr. Farouk Elbaz, understandably, there are people who are dropping out of the counting business, at least publicly, as we've already covered, the National Park Service is not going to go public with its numbers anymore. But for those agencies that are going to stay in the business of counting crowds, will they pay heed to, for example, what John saw? You have to count the underground. You have to count the side streets. You have to get transit numbers and throw them all into the pot and cook them up.
Yeah, there are certainly ways to do all of that together. But in some ways, the political impact means that one has to figure out a specific time where we can call it the peak time of the event, whatever that event might be, whether it's a celebration or a political strategy. And it is possible to count people at a given time, at a given space, very accurately. But you cannot possibly say the total number of people that came to this place during this day was XX. Mm-hmm. Because you need whatever you count, you must be able to make that into a unit of time and space. Mm-hmm. And like this gentleman that said there were tons of people. Yeah, what is tons of people at a given time? And they're moving from this place to that place. Yeah, are they the same people or are different people? So you really cannot perceive of the total number unless you want to take a specific time and a specific place.
Let's talk to Michael, who's calling from... Oh, let me get a comment first from Lucy Barber.
One thing I think maybe make it a different challenge in San Francisco than from Washington, D.C., is that in Washington, you can do a little bit more with the crunching of the numbers on transit and also on bus transportation. Here, it felt like, from my friends and everyone that came down, that the people were coming in so many different forms of transportation to get to the Bay Area. You know, they're staying in friends, they're getting on the BART, some are taking the organized buses, others are living in the city and coming for it, so it would be hard to get that kind of count. In Washington, it does tend to be more of this outsider march in, and so in some cases, they've done really good numbers by counting the number of people that come on buses. They did this in 1963, for example, the number of trains, and then doing some, you know, extrapolations from the number of cars because they parked them in a specific area. And so that can help because they're sort of the new method in Washington is to have everybody park in the suburban metro parking lots, and including the buses, and then they go in and then they can do counts on what's the difference between the metro ridership on that day than what you would have on a normal Saturday or on a normal Sunday. And that can can give you another style of what the caller was interested in terms of getting the people moving in and out of the city. It feels to me like it would be harder to do that in San Francisco.
Let's take a call from Michael in San Francisco. Hi, Michael. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. I'd like to make a comment and then a question. The comment has to do with the nature of these demonstrations as being somewhat anti-democratic in that they have been traditionally used. No wonder they started in the United States in the 30s. It was the period of the rise of fascism and communism in the world. And both these kind of fringe political parties oftentimes saw mass demonstrations as a way of undermining the governments that they were opposed to. But my question goes to more, who pays for the liability, both for the damage that is often caused in these mass demonstrations, or just for the cost of policing them? Everyone else in society who wants to use public space is expected to pay for the additional cost to the public for use of those spaces. Do we have a mechanism whereby, at a mass demonstration, if people begin to destroy private property, the people who organize the demonstrations have a bond or an insurance policy to cover all these damages?
Let's take that in two parts. We're going to take the last part first and go to Gregory Sir on that.
Well, obviously, the mechanism by which we recover costs of damage, that's criminal conduct. There were arrests made on Saturday, and they are totaling up the bills for the damage to the... Well, I'm just answering the question.
Right.
As far as the organizers, San Francisco is self-indemnified, so we pretty much pay our own bills. And as far as the police resources and other city agency resources dedicated to any spontaneous event, especially with regard to First Amendment type demonstrations, the city has enough resources out there to keep the public safe and to clean it up afterwards. And it just goes in general policing. And because of the current economic situation really across the whole country, we try to do it as much as we can with on-duty officers to keep the overtime costs down.
Lucy Barber, Michael's portrayal of history there, does that resonate with you?
I think there's definitely a sense in which the age of the 1930s was the age of where you started to have larger and larger demonstrations. I'm not sure I'd tie it so closely to just fascism. I think it's also a nature of the changes in technology and travel. It's the same period in which you start to have huge conventions for traditional Republican parties. They start to change from just Republican or Democratic parties. Their conventions start getting to be bigger, more like celebrations rather than a small gathering of the political insiders. It's also the age when tourism starts to go much bigger and you start to have more of these big festival events in different locations. So it's not so much, my comment wasn't that demonstrations started in the 1930s. Demonstrations had been going on for years, but the kind of new change from especially for national ones, from a focus on the number of spectators to the number of participants is part of this whole sense of large demonstrations becoming more possible in faraway areas. I mean, the size of demonstrations in the local stage in New York City, they had huge parades in the 19th century. They've had huge parades in England and, you know, before America was formed. And some of those were political, too.
So, and they all had a price tag.
And sometimes people try to make... sometimes when people really hated marches in Washington, they tried to make them pay for it. But the First Amendment clearly makes that illegal.
Let's go to Craig in Redwood City. Hi, Craig. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I had two questions for Dr. Farouk Elbaz. One is he the same Farouk Elbaz that trained the Apollo astronauts in geology? The second question is, was he or has he been able to do controlled experiments to calibrate his photo technique, let's say by taking 50,000 people and putting them out on the mall and then photographing them?
Very good questions. The answer to the first one is yes. And actually, the first counting I did was to count craters on the surface of the moon to figure out the relative age of spaces on the moon when we were selecting landing sites for the Apollo astronauts. If there are very many craters, then it's an old surface. Fewer craters, it's a younger surface.
Okay, thank you.
So that was the technique, yes.
And yes, there is a need to do experimentations of control about how many people can you put in a small area. But when I did mine, since I did not have it, I actually made my own experiment by calling up my graduate student saying, I want to show you something. I actually put a square meter mark of clear material on the floor near a wall where I had some maps, and I called my graduate student to show them something, and I was trying to just behave as if I was showing some map, and they said nobody moved, and they looked at that one square meter to see if people come close to see something out there, how many people can be in there. And they found that there's at least 6 people per square meter when they are densely packed. And we looked at the pictures taken by the National Park Service of people that were near the very large screens. They have the screens that show the speakers, and they were very densely packed. And I took this number as the maximum number in the very closely packed area, very close to the screens. And from there on, we had less few people, and that's how we did our count.
I see. That's very interesting. Thank you very much.
And thank you for that, Craig. We're going to go to an email from Jim, who says, my concern after the march was not the actual number of marchers, but how the number was reported in the national media versus local media. National media reported a few thousand, even 25,000 on one station. Local media put the number 3 times higher at up to 80,000. If both media outlets are to be trusted, how can those 2 reported numbers be so different? I'm going to go to Gregory Sir on that in just a moment. Just to let you know, Jim, I had actually heard, this is, I suppose you can call this just word of mouth, but having talked to someone who had a discussion with a New York Times stringer, and apparently one of the issues is how quickly they need to get that information in order to beat the clock, in order to get to press. They sometimes have to get the crowd estimates before the crowd has fully gathered, and undoubtedly relying, Gregory Sir, on much the same things you are, which are projections by the people who are organizing and by the people who are patrolling the crowds.
Well, I think the projections to which the Capitol CHP officer spoke to, those are crowd estimates that they put down weeks before when they put it on their permit, when they're requesting the space, and then they say how many people they expect. That number is almost always either under or overestimated, and very rarely even close to the ballpark of what the people are going to get. I think that what's important for both local, national media, even organizers, probably the truest estimate, and even though it might not be as accurate as the doctor's scientific methodology, is going to be from the event commander or the command post. At every single major demonstration or festival or any large assembly that's got a significant police presence, there will be an event commander. He will at the very least be a captain, and oftentimes a commander or a deputy chief. And that person is ultimately responsible for the goings-on of the whole event, whether it be the march or the assembly. And I think that you can at least rely on the fact that that's going to be consistent. What happens a lot at these different demonstrations is as the media moves along, they'll ask some officer standing on a street corner, hey, how many people do you think this is? And the officer is not being deceptive. He or she will just give the estimate of what they think based on the fact of what's passed by that particular corner. And it'll be an honest estimate, but will it be anywhere near as accurate as what the command post might have, having gotten reports from various quadrants or sectors, and at the same time maybe having had an aerial view or at least an elevated view from the command post? If I could go back to what John asked that question too about subways and mm-hmm. things. We're speaking of crowd estimates, not a census of the crowd. So you can't really get, if they're underground and they're out of sight, you can get a feeling. And he spoke to Halloween. I've been at Halloween the last 8 Halloweens. Halloween is a very static crowd. It does come, it does stay, and everybody is very, very, very close. You can't even walk through the crowd on Halloween. You could walk through this crowd on Saturday. In fact, much of the crowd was walking itself.
So let me ask you one more question before we go back to the phones, Gregory Sir, and that's with a number of agencies throwing up their hands and saying, you know what, we're just not going to release numbers anymore. The people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, the people who show up for the National Park Service, it just gets a horrible mess when you release it to the media, and we're just not going to give numbers anymore. Why hasn't the PD gone in that direction?
Well, I think people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, thank God, is a much lower number than the numbers we're talking about. And you can be very accurate with regard to that. We will always give crowd estimates. I think a lot of the time, the people that go to tremendous efforts to put these things together, whether it's this, whether it's Chinese New Year's, whether it's Halloween, it sets the stage for the next march. It is, I think, rewarding for the organizers on Saturday to know that they threw an event that drew the most people in this highly charged environment that we have right now. This march that happened on Saturday was far greater than any march we had with regard to the Gulf War, and that was actually when the fighting was going on. And this is before anything has happened in that regard.
Let's talk to Mary Louise, who's holding in Palo Alto. Mary Louise, thank you for waiting.
You know, thank you. I was almost ready to put my phone on because, I mean, up, because I feel like some of what I called about has already, in a way, been dealt with, but one of the questions I have is, it seems that through our government there are ways that they can take pictures that are extremely accurate from very far away. And so I had this feeling that if it was really wanted to have an idea of the number, that it could be calculated with help of photographs even from... well, whether it be planes or perhaps satellites coming by, or, you know, I know they're not spinning around constantly in the air everywhere, but I just feel like if it was really necessary, they should be able to take pictures and then calculate. So that's one of the things I wanted to say. And also, I've been a peace activist since I came to this country in 1963, and I have not been to any where it was as completely packed with people, many places we were not able to move at all, and then it would let up after some time. But many times we stood still for 20 minutes, half an hour or so, could not even move. And then on the side streets, more people were coming in, more people were coming in. So I just wanted to say that from... I really felt like I'd never seen such a large crowd for a peace march, and I would have guessed at least 220,000 people or so there.
Mary Louise, thank you for that. Farouk Elbaz, it comes down with the methods that Marie Louise was suggesting up front. As you mentioned, it comes down to who's going to pay for that.
Yes, although she brings up a very important point there. First, yes, spy satellites that are owned by the government can get photographs at a given time. That would help in this, but they would not do that because they cannot tell us how clear are these photographs. They will not divulge the fact that the photographs exist, number one, or how good they are. So that would not work. However, there are parts of the U.S. government, like NASA, that actually own aircraft and own very good photography equipment that is used in testing for satellite missions that could be assigned to do these jobs if, as the thoughtful lady mentioned, if the government is very interested in helping in this regard. And I personally believe that we should. Some agency of the U.S. government should be able to take this on because it is important for people to know how many people went to this thing, whether it is politically or for the safety of the citizenry or whatever the reason is. It is important to get numbers, and it is possible to take, say, one NASA aircraft, ask it to go over once or twice over a given all of the large demonstrations or groupings of people, and have somebody within the U.S. government to do that, and then that somebody can issue these numbers to say that at that given place and the given time there were so many people without any discussion, with plus or minus 2% error or 5% error, and that could resolve the whole issue.
Lucy Barber?
I guess I'm more ambivalent about whether or not we really want the government to take this task on. Partly, my attitude is that in some cases, maybe not when it's the Chinese New Year, but when it's a protest against the federal government, that sort of turns you into having to be really, the organizers have to then have such a close dependent relationship on the same people that they're protesting against. And I think to want that too hard puts you in a very sort of complicit position. And also, I wonder about, I know that in Washington, where they've been watching these demonstrations for years, the media have themselves developed better techniques for counting so that they're able to do a pretty good job of interpreting between the counts you might get from the authorities for a fixed time and the organizers' estimates, and that if media across the country didn't just depend on what a police officer said on the corner from an impression, but carefully developed their own methods and got reports and listened to different people's impressions, we would get good enough numbers. And also, do we want our politics about these demonstrations to get reduced just to crowd counts? These demonstrations aren't just about how many people show up. That's incredibly important. But they're also about the message of the people. They're about the coalition that gets formed on it, the ability of people to come together peacefully, if that's the goal of the demonstration. There's so many more things besides just the turnout. And I would sort of get worried that if we had an agency doing it, that that would continue to devolve the politics down to just what I've always called the numbers game. And it's not that it isn't important, but it isn't the only thing at stake.
Danny in Berkeley. Was that Greg Reser? Or did I hear Farouk Elbaz in there?
No, I was actually going to say that I thought about that myself, and I would make this as a second alternative if the government is not going to step in, and because we think that government can be clean without having to take sides. A company can do that for the media, because if the media were able to do that job, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But the media has not been able to do it, so maybe the media can get a company to do this, and they will pay for the services so that they can do that. And I'm not really thinking about it only from in terms of the
for 24 years, and while I was airing what they still do, they do Day in the Greens and Shoreline Amphitheater, and we always knew exactly how many people were at an event. And I'm just talking about the numbers. I'm not talking about the merits of the event, which I think are very meritorious. But for us, we could look at a crowd at Shoreline Amphitheater or at a Day in the Green. We knew exactly how many people could fit on the infield of the stadium or in the lawn of Shoreline, and we'd know. And it always surprised us that we would hear these reports of demonstrations that we knew were just totally exaggerated one way or another. And it often seemed to us that sometimes the police would say at a public demonstration, if there were they would say there were 50 or 100,000 people without incident. And we knew just by walking around and just by looking at the crowd or, you know, how big it may be, how many people more or less were there, based on us knowing how many people come to events every day. You just kind of learn this after a while. And when you sell millions of tickets like we did, you get to know what a crowd size is.
You do have the advantage, Danny, of having people in a contained area, though. If you put them in the Shoreline or you put them in an auditorium, nobody's moving so much in and out as they would at a huge demonstration.
Well, that's true, but you also know how hard it is to move among the people. And you know how many square feet it is, and we look at an area and say, well, this is twice the size of the lawn of Shoreline, or three times the size, or this is about the size of the infield of the Oakland Stadium, and we knew how many people we could fit on the field. Not the seats, just the field. And you get an idea of how crowded things are and how hard it is to walk through a group of people. And we say, we would know how many people were in the stadium, and we'd know how hard it is to walk through the crowd. And the farther you get away from the stage or the podium, wherever, whatever the case may be, the easier it is to walk. You just kind of get a feel.
And in fact, that goes to the question of density that Farouk Elbaz brought up earlier, too, is that that's going to fluctuate from one piece to the other. Danny, thanks for the insight on that. I have an email for you, Gregory, sir. Well, this is from Andrew in Oakland, who says, how do you know the capacity of a certain public space? If Civic Center is said to hold 40 to 45,000 people, where does that number come from?
Those numbers are provided by pretty much folks like the doctor who do a per square foot or a per cubic foot, or a cubic, or that'd be a meter, I guess, figuring out exactly what could fit in there. Those are those. In fact, it's funny going to Danny's question. You know, like Candlestick Park, the infield of Candlestick Park, we know holds 20,000 people. So that's what he's speaking of. I got a little nostalgic there when he spoke about Days on the Green. We haven't had those since the late 70s. But the numbers, and I think you hit the nail on the head that Bill Graham goes by, those are the same numbers that I'm giving you. We know Candlestick Park holds 20,000. We know the Candlestick Park parking lot holds 100,000. We know, like I said, Civic Center holds 40 to 43,000, depending on what you're talking about. But then you have to take into account that's just the square proper. Once you get the street closure and there's people in the streets, then the number grows from there.
We're going to have to let that be their last remark because we're coming to the close of the hour. I want to thank everyone who participated. We were joined earlier by David Brunel, Public Affairs Officer for the Office of Capital Protection with the California Highway Patrol. Gregory Sir has been with us throughout the hour, Deputy Chief of the San Francisco Police Department. Dr. Farouk Elbaz has been on the line from the Center for Remote Sensing in Boston University. He directs that organization. And Lucy Barber here in the studio, the author of Marching on Washington, The Forging of an American Political Tradition. That's newly released. She's an archivist with the California State Archives in Sacramento. We've got another hour of Forum to come, so stick around here on KQED-FM. I'm Angie Coiro.